Friday, Bucky's. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. You know them. You know them well. Yeah, see? Yeah. They've been around for 50 years, right? Yeah. Taking care of your cars. They got 16 locations. You know, they've asked us to listen more closely to CBS News at the top of the hour. I don't normally listen, but CBS News announcing that Joe Biden has hit the... it's vaccinating more than a million. Just for a little context, because CBS News didn't. And December 15th, CBS News didn't tell you this. 969,000 Americans were already being vaccinated. So really didn't move the bar that much higher up. Plus the Equality Act, which they talked about, and they have a cut from Schumer. They didn't also tell you how very controversial it is, and it most likely will not even get a vote in the Senate. They don't mention that as well. CBS News, just now that I'm listening, be nice to actually cover both sides. But
John,
yes, that's not the point. Yes, Tom.
That's top of the news hour. You can't get into the Equity Act. It might not get a vote. Why? Because it'll be a filibuster. That gets to explain all that is not what you can do at the top of the hour news break.
Oh, okay, Tom. Right. Sure. Right. Yeah. You and CBS Good. News. To say that it is, but just put the word controversial. How about the may not get a vote in the Senate? They could say that. I'm just saying that.
Because that's not what the news happened
today. These people make me sick to my stomach.
It's like, God, 965,000 Americans had been vaccinated by December 15th. Joe Biden comes in. The Biden comes in and takes it to 1.5 million. So he already had a running start of almost a million. But CBS doesn't give you that. Believe me, if Trump had done that sort of bellicose stuff, it would have put it into perspective. They would have fact-checked it. But anyway, what I'm going to do? Listen, I'm going to stop listening. Stop listening to CBS News at the top of the hour. It drives me nuts. Golly gee.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you, John.
That's not feeding me. You know what feeds me?
CBS News.
My love and my respect for you, Tom, and Russell Wilson.
Verify
that Russell Wilson was Russell Wilson in a sit-down meeting or a Zoom meeting? Because when you say that somebody storms out of a meeting, you can't storm out of a Zoom meeting. But here's the story. Russell Wilson, quote-unquote, stormed out after listening to CBS News. No, I'm kidding. After his idea of fixing the Seattle offense was dismissed. This hurts me because, to me, that's your guy. You're paying him all of this money. Yeah. He understands football. He's like a Svengali when it comes to football. You should treat him with the kid gloves because you don't want him to go anywhere. If he's sitting in a meeting and has a couple of suggestions, I don't know what he was asking for. Do we know the specifics of it, Tom? Did he actually storm out of a meeting when he was dismissed?
So, first off, this came up at our pre-show meeting. So I rechecked the Athletic article, which reveals this. And yes, this was during the season. And so they were meeting. He's meeting with the coaches right before the Arizona game. I don't know if you remember, the Arizona game was on Thursday, and he had just had two really bad games where he had thrown seven interceptions in the course of two games. And we were on the decline, and Arizona came to town, and they were higher in a kite because they had just won that, Hail Mary pass at the end of it. So they were really looking good. We came back and beat them. I think that's important to keep in mind what's going on in that case. But apparently he said that he had a plan. He said, listen, I understand we're not playing well. I'm not playing well, perhaps seven interceptions, but here's what I think we can do to solve my problem or the offense's problem. And apparently they did not take it seriously. Now, we don't know if it was Schottenheimer, who was the offensive coordinator at the time, or Pete Carroll, or both of them, but apparently they were dismissive and he stormed out of the room. What's important about that word stormed, I think, is that based on the analysis I've read about the Athletic revelations, is that that's not a word that Russell Wilson's team would have said. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't mean the Seahawks, but his personnel. They would not use the word storm because that makes you sound petulant. It makes you sound childish. So clearly they think whatever source the Athletic had was coming from the Seahawks organization. So there's clear pushback trying to make Russell Wilson look bad as a way to get back at him for going public with airing their dirty laundry. That Athletic article for the first time makes me think there might be some real division. Before, I just thought, oh, this is a kind of typical post-Super Bowl off-season talk. There's nothing to it. Now I think if that really is a Seahawks source revealing that information, there is some clear tension. It makes no sense for the Seahawks to get rid of him. We'd take a big cap hit of like 39 $1 million or something next year. Uh-huh. I mean, it's just, but they, I have heard enough analysis that say they don't think he'll be with the Seahawks in 2 years if this thing isn't resolved this year.
Okay.
Yikes.
But look, they, Arizona is coming to town and we haven't been playing well. People are scared because we played them in October and I think Arizona beat us in October. Isn't that correct? So the question is that when he's sitting there, who knows what he asked for, right?
Right.
And who's going to, maybe they've got other plans. So let's like, you know, what are you beating up on him for? Yeah, Seahawks, we lost to them 34-37, October 25th. So who knows what was said in the meeting, but him being in the meeting and, you know, maybe he got a text and said, I have to go quickly. Sierra needs me. And he got up quickly and left because he's got kid and he got stuff.
Well, no,
going
I think
on,
he heard that he knew the Tom and Curly show was starting at 3. And so he had to get out back to his car to listen, tune in. Anyway,
now,
I think
the question
there's
is, did he have a plan A? Because I know when it comes to Russell, like as he's coming out, like, okay, Russ, go in there. You got plan A, which is to, you know, ask him to make these changes. Now you should really definitely have a plan B. I remember you said that to him, and he's.
I always say if you have a plan A, there's no need for a plan B.
Thank God you had that drop.
Thank you, Tom. Check out that for us. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yes.
If Russell Wilson is not under center, or back in a shotgun position and about to run 55 yards laterally on either side of the field before releasing the ball for an unbelievable touchdown pass. If he's not here next year, Tom, it's a rebuilding year. Things change. Normally, athletes don't stay for their entire career, right?
Well, I mean, it used to be, yes. Roethlisberger always was a Steeler.
I know,
Brady was
I know.
Always, but now, things might be changing. And he wants to be more like Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. He wants to have more say over the offense. And I think he has earned that right to have more say.
Okay.
Whether he should have enough say that we don't need an offensive coordinator is another matter. And that's the battle between Pete Carroll. I guess it comes down to, would you rather have Pete Carroll or Russell Wilson?
Wow. Well, with the change, with the way the NFL is changing and Pete Carroll being kind of an old school defensive coach, I don't know if it's evolving beyond him or if he is smart enough in order to keep bringing people in. I know a couple of times you and I would have conversations with players off and they would tell us that they get kind of tired of all the rah-rah stuff that Pete does.
Right.
The new coaches, new ideas, fresh ideas. I know that when pitchers have the ability to throw 98 miles an hour, and when that is their pitch, their seasons and their longevity of their career is not as long as somebody like a Jamie Moyer who pitched up into the age of 51 because his fastball was like 83 miles an hour, but he had unbelievable accuracy. If your main attribute is your ability to outrun somebody that weighs almost 300 pounds, that can run a 4.4, you know, 4.640 or something, if you start to lose the wheels, which is one of the big things that you've got when you're Russell Wilson, then all of a sudden you're not Tom Brady standing, what is he, 6'3", 6'4", something like that, in the pocket, hanging out there like somebody from 1983, throwing the ball downfield and hitting targets at the age of 43 years old. So does Russell Wilson's main attribute, his ability to sort of make plays up on his own, begin to diminish as he gets older? And he runs the risk of being hurt more often. And then therefore, you got this guy that runs around. He's taken some big hits, and you know, every time he does, you start to hold your breath thinking, well, that's it for our franchise guy. That's it.
The analysis of the Athletic article, or you know, sort of an expose, was that Russell Wilson has a higher impression of his abilities than the Seahawks do, and that's concerning. Right now, we understand that we went to the Super Bowl twice with Russell Wilson at quarterback because he was a cog in a machine. Now that he is the main driver and no longer the cog, how much do we need him? If we could do a straight-up swap with, like, Deshaun Watson, for Pete's sake, I do that in a second. But short of that, I don't think there's anybody who is better suited to the Seahawks, and I do not want to go to 3 or 4 years. Teams live forever and dream forever of getting a franchise quarterback. Russell Wilson, he might not be the best quarterback, but he's one of the top 2, 3, 4 quarterbacks. And because of that, we're lucky to have him. We're in the playoffs almost every single year, and I do not want to lose him.
You know what he is, Tom? He's Mr. Unlimited.
Yeah, that's right. But apparently not to Seahawks brass.
Yes, the typical boring, Russell, the robot Russell, the one you guys love to know. Real exciting. Yeah, I'm real excited. But anyways, everybody has to have an alter ego, right? And I've been thinking about what my alter ego would be, and I think I have an alter ego. His name's Mr. Unlimited.
Yeah. There you go. That's like you, Tom. That's I prefer, you, baby. Let's see what you
I prefer
are.
Danger Russ.
He didn't give himself that name, did he?
Did
he give himself Danger Russ?
Yeah, that's his Twitter handle, isn't it, or something?
All right.
So
the chief of police, at least he knows he's
aware of himself. Okay.
Here we go. Well, the Seattle Police Union president addresses a controversial tweet from the U.S. Capitol. There were a group of people that wanted to get a chance to talk to Mike Sloan about the tweet that he had sent out when the insurgents, I think that's the word that the media all agreed that they would call it, were storming the Capitol to take selfies. He tweeted out something, and I'll let Como do part of the heavy lifting for us. Here we go.
After violent protests stormed the halls of Congress, Seattle Police Union President Mike Solon retweeted a post about a Black Lives Matter activist being among the rioters.
As a verifiable fact that the FBI charged this individual.
A widely held interpretation is that Solon blames BLM for the insurrection and calls for his resignation mounted. The Guild president says he only wanted to highlight the challenges for police.
And the reality is I compared it to police being caught in the middle between two factions vying for political control.
But the Black Law Enforcement Association dismissed that response.
He never did apologize publicly. As a matter of fact, he doubled down and backed the statement that he made. And we find that very unprofessional.
As tempers flared, there were several attempts to disrupt the meeting.
Black Lives Matter.
One woman tried repeatedly to speak out.
Mike, I've got a quick question. How is it that you expect people to do that?
But was kept on mute and was told to ask questions through chat. Solon was also pressured to release the names of the six Seattle officers who were in D.C. the day of the insurrection. He says first the investigation has to run its course.
Those officers are entitled to due process.
Yeah. All right. There were early people were saying, oh, you know what? There's BLM people that are in there. There's anarchists that are in there. And he pointed to John Sullivan, who is a BLM guy who's done a lot of talking about going into the White House and beating people up and punching people and setting things on fire. And he was the one that was standing right there when the woman was shot by the Capitol Hill police officer. John Sullivan took that tape and, by the way, sold it to NBC and to CBS for $35,000. He also has a book deal coming. So Mike Solon's like, hey, you know what? Maybe there's some BLM guys in there as well.
Yeah, but that's because he has a political point to make. That's what I think.
Oh, yeah.
So I have no problem with Solon. I mean, the reason he's the head of the union is because he's such a, you know, he's like a ball buster. I mean, he really does sort of say this. He's like, it's a candy, you know, I don't even want to say that, but
should have stood with it. Right. Stay with it. He only wanted to highlight the
challenges for police. Oh, come on. Well, it just really is a cut between two factions. That's not the case. And he should have just fessed up. Well, it's the way I feel about things. OK,
that would have
now the other the trickier issue is this question of should those six Seattle officers be made public? And I don't think that's his decision. I mean, he can have opinion on it, but it's a matter in the court. And the court so far, so there were four press representatives requesting the names. It should be part of the public record, apparently. And a judge temporarily blocked it, put a restraining order on it because it was supposed to be released, I think, next week until he had further consideration, further evidence to decide whether they should get a permanent injunction. But that's a good question. Right now, is the argument I think the argument that's most compelling, at least to me, is that there is an ongoing investigation, an internal investigation among the police Seattle police, to see if any of these six did anything untoward. It's okay to go to a rally. It's not okay to then storm the Capitol. And right now that investigation is ongoing. The fear is that if those police are in effect outed, or however you want to, their identities are revealed.
If they broke the law and went into the Capitol.
Yeah.
If they broke the law and went into the Capitol, then they've committed a crime. They're charged with a crime and their names become public.
Yes. And
but if all they did was go there, like of the 35,000 that did go there or 40,000 that did go there, they weren't among the 800 that went in there and took selfies and jumped around like idiots, then therefore they're not guilty of anything. So then you can't charge them with it. So then why make their names public? Because the first two that came out apparently have, and I don't know, they said they had death threats against them, or they've been doxxed and people know where they live, so they're concerned for their well-being, you know.
Yes.
Whether
and so
act on that or not, I don't know.
Yeah, and then the question is, so let's assume they do the internal investigation. Right now, the word from the attorney, so he'll obviously give you, you know, what he's hoping or expecting, which is that none of them did anything, you know, wrong. Like, they weren't part of the invading the Capitol. Then the question becomes, does the Seattle Times and, you know, Como and all of those, the media organizations, do they have a right to then find out who these police are? And I'm not really sure. It sounds like they think they do because they're public servants. The problem is the danger could be, will people then, treat them badly because their names are revealed? I don't know what the law is about public officials who are on record, what kind of access the media has to that.
Well, a lot of times public officials' addresses are not made public.
No. That's right. No one's advocating that. I think all they're saying is just get what are their names? Who are they?
As they continue to investigate that, I wonder if they're also investigating how that police officer died, right? The guy that was hit in the head with a fire extinguisher.
Why do you
and then
keep
they find
bringing
out
that
he wasn't.
Up, John?
What because I want to know, Tom, because it was part of the charging documents. It was part of what the House said, and it was also how the New York Times, I read it. He dreamed of being a police officer and then was killed by the pro-Trump mob. It's like, that was from February 16th. From the New York Times, and then you find out he didn't. He didn't die. He didn't die of that. Plus, why did they cremate his body?
What did he die of? I mean, what are you implying? There's still like 133 officers injured. I mean, are you trying to, minimize the fact that there was the insurrection? I know that drives you crazy, that word, but there was a lot of brutality happening.
The House charged Donald Trump with the insurrection and then also attached that police officer's name saying that he died as a result of Donald Trump. That was also in the charges against the president. And we find out just right after the whole impeachment facade is over, then we find out that this guy didn't die from a fire extinguisher. He didn't die from the mob. By the way, everybody that did die, none of them were cops. They were all either outside or the one that
was
inside.
Well, there were cops that were attacked. I mean,
sure they were.
The
we always have
attacked.
Attacks. When every time we have peaceful riots, Tom, we have
That's
cops
right.
attacked. Yes,
and,
every time there's peaceful protests,
you turn a blind eye to
attacked.
The fact that they are the cops were being attacked. Now there were
oh,
some
they were
cops
being attacked.
Attacking
oh, they were
cops.
Absolutely they were attacked. That's when you have peaceful protests like that. All right, Tracy Taylor,
this time they're
traffic.
On your side.
It's not my side. I do not support that nonsense. Thank you, Tom.
Anytime, John.
Oh, here she comes now. She's always the cat's mother. Don't talk like she's not in the room. I'm talking about the biggest and best in the Northwest. If you could take the Muckleshoot Casino and make it human, make it flesh, make it blood, make it breathe, make it laugh, make it cry, make it do a podcast, it would be Rachel Bell.
Yeah, that's the best intro you've ever given me. Thanks, pal.
R. Bell, by the way, enjoy this song because it's not going to be around much longer. I know you're fighting against that.
I honestly can't believe that you are letting a single listener make a choice and win over me, who works here, your friend, my segment, my song. Who is this guy? Is this guy from the mob?
Todd.
Is this like your...
Todd.
Were you...
Todd from Gig Harbor.
Is Todd going to murder you if you don't change the song? Is this like some mob?
No, I just feel a close... the same thing happened to me when I sang an Eagles song for the talent show at Archbishop Carroll, and the nuns made us change the line, "I'd like to sleep with you in the desert tonight." And we had to change the line, and we changed the line. All of the boys, we sang for the boys first, they were yelling out horrible words that we can't say on the radio, but apparently you can scream it at me while I'm on stage singing an Eagles song.
Well,
I get a peaceful, easy feeling.
See, you're fine. You're still singing it.
I'd like to sleep with you in the desert tonight. They made us change it to, I'd like to eat with you in the desert tonight. And then everyone's like, you can't eat that. I'm like, I'm saying, I didn't, how do I tell the nuns? Hey, you know, that's probably not a good word. I mean, gee whiz.
I don't get it.
Anyway.
Anyway,
go
let's
ahead.
Move on to
what
me since I've already
today?
Been punished. I'm not going to get my song. At least I can have my story. So
ahead.
Today I released the 100th episode of my podcast, Your Last Meal. It's been on for the past 4.5 years. And
wow.
Instead of interviewing a celebrity like I usually do, I thought it would be cool to interview three 100-year-old women to celebrate 100 episodes. And they're all from the Seattle area. And today I'm just going to highlight one of these interviews because this woman, Eleanor Owen, is so fascinating. In 2021, that means that she has her own Wikipedia page. That's how you prove that you've had an interesting life. So Eleanor Owen, she still lives on her own in a big old house in Seattle. She still drives. She's not on a single medication. She's super sharp, and she has a memory that I envy at more than half her age. And this woman has had the most varied and fascinating set of careers of anyone I've ever encountered, honestly. She grew up the daughter of Italian immigrants in the New York Hudson Valley, but she was really, really smart, and she graduated 2 years early.
My first paying job was as a cub reporter on the Newburgh Daily News for $17 a week. And I saved every penny and actually went to New York City and enrolled at Trapagan School of Design. I actually was fairly successful as a designer and costumer for modern dancers, primarily Merce Cunningham. I did all of his shows.
So Eleanor also acted. She was cast in 2 Broadway productions. She did a few off-Broadway shows. She directed Children's Theater in New York. And then her husband got a job in Washington. So they moved to rural Washington and then to Washington State, or rather to Seattle. Her and her husband had 2 children. But when her son was a teenager, his name is Jody, he started showing severe symptoms of schizophrenia. And one day she found a noose dangling in the basement, and she decided she really needed to get him help. But because of the way the laws were at the time, and he wouldn't take medication or go to the doctor, she couldn't get him hospitalized.
And a terrible tragedy took place. He took one of my husband's guns, went to a tavern, shot up in the ceiling of the tavern. Men jumped on him, but the gun went off and killed somebody. A tragedy that can't be undone. And my son was declared innocent by reason of insanity. My first visit to Western State Hospital, he just wasn't there. He could not return to reality.
So he remained in the psychiatric hospital for years, but Eleanor quit her job. At the time, she was a professor at the UW, and she connected with other parents who were also unable to help their mentally ill children. So she started going to Olympia, she started meeting with legislators, and in the span of a year, she got a law passed, something that would have helped her get her son help before he went to Western. The same year, this is 1979, she and those other parents formed the Washington Advocates of the Mentally Ill, and within a few months, that became NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which is still to this day the nation's largest grassroots mental health organization. They provide support, education, and advocacy to families of the mentally ill, and there are 1,200 U.S. locations. So this woman went from being a cub reporter to a costume designer to a Broadway star to starting NAMI, doing mental health advocacy. They started calling her the Barracuda in Olympia because she kept going down there and making things happen. And the good news is, her son, who is now in his early 60s, is doing great. He lives on his own. He has a job. His medication is under control. And it's all because Eleanor never gave up on him. So I encourage you to listen to the entire podcast. More of Eleanor's story. There's a lot more. Plus 2 other women who are 100 and have engaging stories. I'm going to leave you with one last cut from Eleanor on how to age gracefully.
Oh, you have to keep your teeth. If you don't have good teeth, you're not going to be able to stay well.
Right. So she told me for her birthday, of course, she had to have some dumb Zoom party, but she was sent 100 roses that she's now fermenting into wine. And she asked me to come to her 101st birthday party next January, and we will drink the wine together.
Wow.
Fantastic. What did she think of
Dory? She had an incredible life.
What does she think about being 100? Does she see that as an accomplishment or just like it's just another year?
I think she loves it. I mean, she just finished writing her memoirs. She's active in a writing group. I think she's somebody who doesn't think about her age because she is so healthy and active that for her, I think she's just continuing on living her life, which she's very, very lucky that, you know, I think part of it is how you live, but a lot of it's just genetics that you have a really sharp, keen mind.
Yeah. And sounds a good dentist, Dr. Rye Spore.
And a good dentist.
NorthWest.com.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Spore or Anson.
I guess your hair is fine.
Thank you, Arbel.
Well done.
There we go. What a life. Wow. She packed a lot in. Tracy Taylor.
I can't follow that at all. Like
you don't need you're going to get there too. Don't you worry about it. All right.
I sure hope so. I hope I have a fantastic life like that.
Keep your teeth.
Yeah. Yes, I will. I do that.
All righty. Kelsey Grammer, Tom, would like to see Frasier back on television. Looks like it might be happening. 35 Emmy Awards, 11 seasons, one of the most successful comedies, and an actor whose career spanned from Wings and Cheers and then Frasier, and then he ended up doing another show that didn't do so well, another one, and he has sort of been done some stuff on
Broadway,
as they say, on Broadway. Yeah. He's
it's really versatile.
He's going to get Frasier will come back again. By the way, he got kicked out of Juilliard after just 2 years. They thought he wasn't focused enough. He's an interesting cat. And the rest of the crew, they haven't signed back up yet. David Hyde Pierce hasn't agreed to do the remake of it or I guess the next season of it. The father, Mahoney, has passed away in 98 or something like that. Or no, 2008 or something.
Yeah, more recently.
And, or
2018, just a couple years ago.
2018, yeah. So the others are not on board, but Kelsey Grammer will be back with Frasier on Paramount, right?
Yeah, Paramount Plus. So they're making a big push on that. What's interesting is we'll have to see if they don't hire the other people from the the last show. I wonder if it'll be more of a solo show. If it'll get more into his psychology. I mean, it really is, since he's a character who's survived over three different sitcoms. They could go like any direction. It could be focused on his aging aspect, his being alone. I mean, they can go in just about any direction because people know and apparently love that character enough that if he doesn't have the same cast of characters around him, he still could make a go of it. The weird thing is the guy is so successful or so popular that he also is currently set to star in this comedy at ABC opposite Alec Baldwin. So he's gotten like sitcoms, on and on. And I was somewhat familiar with Frasier. I didn't watch it that often, but I know that it was deemed, relatively high art for sitcoms. Yes. I had no idea that he was so versatile as an actor and a performer. It turns out that, I think he won a Tony for his performance of in the revival of La Cage aux Folles. The guy's done a number of Broadway musicals. Yeah. And then I hear tell as we're in the pre-show that you've had not only an encounter, but a filmed encounter on Frasier guy.
Well, I should probably say that I have not heard yet if they're getting all of us back together again. I know that David Hyde Pierce is. I haven't. I keep checking my phone. I don't know what the time difference is between here and L.A., but here's a brief clip that I don't speak, but boy, I look good. This is the clip from when Frasier was filmed in Seattle.
Good morning. What's going on? Excuse me. What's happening?
There's an electrical problem ahead. We're going back to Westlake.
What? But those people are waiting for me. Well, they're so close.
I guess it just isn't your day.
But it is my day.
Don't panic, Frasier.
Oh, don't panic. Yes, why should I have any reason to panic? My God, I'm only going to miss a celebration in my own honor, making me a laughingstock forever. And why? Because you spilled coffee.
See if you can pick up where the lines are being lip-synced in. Did you hear it, Tom?
Coffee on my shoes.
No. You're blaming me?
If you had the gripping ability, every species above the tree sloth was born with.
Perhaps you should think back on the 45 minutes you and your ego spent in that shoe store trying on every pair of shoes, including the ones the manager was wearing.
Are you calling me vain?
If the Joan and David fits.
God's sake, moment you step out of the crate
with a head that size, the problem ever since you looked at me in the face.
Just... We're on the monorail hot day in Seattle, and in order to shoot the scene, they had to turn off the air conditioning, so it was hot. And then you'd roll towards the one, and then every time we screwed up, we had to back up and start again.
Back up the monorail.
Back of the monorail. Back to one, everybody. Oh, my God. It was hot. David Hyde, they shot the one scene at 11 o'clock. Kelsey was finished with his scene. He disappeared for a number of hours, came back, and was not necessarily ready to perform. And it was really sad. Take after take after take after take after take.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah. And he's been battling some stuff, and he was probably... Yes. Still battling at that time. David Hyde Pierce looked over at me, and I looked at David Hyde Pierce, and I was like, and he just had this look on his face like he was embarrassed for Kelsey because what was happening, every time he'd screw up, he'd go, "Hey, everyone!" And then he would sing some bawdy kind of like sailor song. Well, we went to the town and it went to the naughty and so hey ho, hey ho,
a sea shanty.
Yeah, he'd sea shanty us back to the beginning of the monorail again. And then they'd quiet everybody, they'd cut the air conditioning, and we would roll, and then we'd get like halfway, and then... Because you see how quickly he had to deliver those lines?
Yeah.
Oh, and cut. All right, you know, we're going to do it again. Our backup, back to one, everybody. And then Kelsey and I went to the round to Henson and Artie. And David Hyde Pierce is like just looking at him like, okay, all right. All right.
He's been very successful, but he has had his demons, too. That's also been covered in the press. Yeah.
I think I had a few, too. Did I look like I was... How did I look? Did I look like I was in character the whole time, Jacob?
Your face is really... It's just your side profile, so you really can't make
out... That's what I asked for. You know, it's in a... That's with my writer. I said, just this side. Just this side. How do I look, though, huh?
It's nice, yeah. You're recognizably John Curley if you're really looking and you know you're there.
Yes, of course. And then
Mahoney's part.
Can you see the lip syncing? Jacob, watch it again and look for the lip syncing, okay?